Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We're glad that you are with us tonight, or if you're joining us on our recorded session, either on Facebook or on our podcast, we're glad that you're joining us that way as well. Tonight, we are going to talk about hands-on methods to help children engage with literature, and our special guest is Karen Thatcher. Karen, we just want to thank you for joining us. Taking some time out of your busy schedule and being here tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking me.
Yeah, definitely. So just so you get to know who Karen is, I'm going to read a little bit of her bio and then have her finish introducing just why she's so passionate about this subject, because it's something that that she was so excited to be able to talk to us about tonight. So Karen is an associate professor at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama, and she teaches both undergraduate and graduate courses in speech and language pathology and loves sharing and teaching about language, literacy, and communication. She's originally from Indiana, and she has two grown daughters, and she also has one grandson that she says she absolutely loves. He's the love of her life, and he loves to read, and she said wherever she travels, she buys books for him. So he has books from Germany, Lithuania, London, Dublin, Ireland, Haiti, Boston, not so far, and more. So she's written a book, though. It's called Fun with Therapy, and you say it's your labor of love. Can you tell us a little bit about your book and just how that came about, Karen?
I can. It has been a labor of love for me. Mm-hmm. I, of course, teaching, and I teach. I'm a speech language pathologist by trade, by background. And so as I have taught about language development and language disorders, literacy is a huge piece of that. And talk a little bit later about the role that language, oral language, has in literacy development, how important those two things are to each other. But because I do teach the language development, I'm always talking about that to my students and the importance of mm-hmm. literacy and how important that is from an academic and a social standpoint.
Several years ago,
I had the opportunity. I did a lot of early intervention when I was up in Indiana, a lot of birth to three. Mm-hmm. And as part of my intervention, I was always taking in books and mm-hmm. using books as part of my therapy for language, right? For language development. And it was interesting talking with parents. They, I didn't realize, I thought it was too early to do books. I didn't think they'd want to sit and look at books. I didn't think, so I was getting the impression that parents didn't know a lot about literacy in that early time. And so I, again, had the opportunity to start working on that and working with parents. Right. And the early intervention system up in Indiana asked me to go and start doing presentations across the state on using literacy in therapy, because I was doing so much of it. And it was amazing when I started doing them. I would have physical therapists, occupational therapists, for speech pathologists, developmental therapists were coming. And typically the it would be like a half day presentation. Mm-hmm. And so I'd do all the research, and this is why it's important. And then the second half of it would be, let's just brainstorm. Let's see what this would look like, and it was very interdisciplinary, which was fun. And it was really interesting to me how many times, they would come up and they'd say, I never thought that occupational therapy would be literacy related. The only thing I could think of was turning a page. And, physical therapy, how would I fit into this? Mm-hmm. And, once we started the brainstorming, the ideas just exploded.
Oh, I'm sure.
They just exploded. It was so much fun. And so the book, and they'd say, are all these written down in some place? How do we get all these ideas? And I'm like, well, you've got them now, go with it. Mm-hmm. But what I ended up doing was keeping all of their ideas, keeping the papers that we did across the state and organizing those, and they eventually became my book.
Wow.
And it was a lot of fun to do it. It was a lot of fun to just get that feedback from them and their enthusiasm. Just
I'm sure.
It was great. It really was fun. And I thoroughly enjoyed writing the book and hopefully, you know, using it.
Right. Well, we're going to kind of go through one of the examples in there and later on. And I just want to let parents know that as you're watching, if you have questions for Karen, if you have comments about our discussion, definitely put them in the feed. We'd like to be able to make this as interactive as possible. But we're going to start talking about the whys first and then the hows later. And so we'll kind of dive into that. And I'm sure we all kind of understand the why we need to do this, but what is literacy first? And what does it mean to be literate? Because I think when we think of that word, we think of the ability to read. We don't think of the larger picture of what literacy really is. And so I'd like you to kind of start with that as a basis for our discussion tonight.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, you know, and you're right. There is that very conventional definition of literacy, the ability to read and write. Mm-hmm. And that's correct. I mean, that is what most of us think of when we think of literacy. Mm-hmm. But we all have different levels of literacy. I mean, even if you do read and write, you know, some of us are avid readers and reread and, you know, we enjoy it. Others, it's a struggle.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, it's just even your personality types and what you enjoy doing. Some people just are not readers. Mm-hmm. And so our children are that way as well. And there are some kids that they may never become completely in that conventional term literate. You know, I'm a real advocate for a lot of the technology that can be out there to help kids learn to read and to read for them so that they have access to the knowledge without having to decode and comprehend and all those things. That's a whole different presentation. But, you know, everybody has their own personal literacy. And I think that's the same for many of our children that struggle to learn how to read for whatever reason that might be. Literacy can be as basic as understanding the concepts of print, what we use print for. Pictures can be using literacy. If you think about going out and if you need to go to the restroom, right? Literacy means you know which of those symbols indicate where you should go. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we do that to make sure that everybody can understand. If we can't read, the symbols are there. And many of our children that use AAC devices, exactly. Right, they're still going to use pictures. Pictures are part of their literacy experience. Mm-hmm. So it's all personal literacy. And there's just it can be whatever really you want it to be.
That's great. I've never heard that concept, personal literacy, but I do love that concept because we try to fit it all into one box as this is what being literate is, but it's that broader scope of understanding.
Absolutely.
Helping our children to understand the world they're functioning in and being able to read it, basically, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then just even the concept of what is literacy from a book standpoint, many parents feel as though, you know, I have to have them sitting on my lap and I have to be reading to them. That doesn't have to happen. And that's kind of the how we're going to talk about a little bit,
right.
But it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So Amy just stated, I think a lot of times we get hung up on the level that our child should be reading at instead of looking at what interests them and what they're drawn to. Sometimes even our smart kids get an easy read when it's a topic they want to read about. So much can be gained.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. So how or what can parents do to influence literacy? I mean, I'm assuming they can do a lot. They're with their kids all the time, especially when they're young.
Absolutely. Well, and what we know now about literacy is that it's acquired in a very similar way as oral language. In other words, you know, we learn language by being around it, by being immersed in it. We learn literacy that way, right? Mm-hmm. Children learn the importance of literacy by watching others use it, by by watching their parents use a shopping list, by watching their parents opening up the mail, reading the newspaper, leaving notes mm-hmm. for each other. If they don't see that, they don't learn to value literacy. It's not important.
That's a very good perspective.
And if you think about what children want, right, they want to do what an adult does.
Exactly.
So if they see mom and dad reading, they're going to pick up a book and they're going to pretend to read.
Oh, yes.
One of the coolest stories I ever had happen was a mother that I was working with, little guy, early intervention again, and I have her total permission to share the story. We were trying to do some literacy. He was probably 2.5 at the time, wanted nothing to do with a book, nothing to do with a book. And I kept trying every week. I'd bring something in. And she's like, oh, we gave up on that. He doesn't want anything to do with books. And I said, well, we'll keep trying. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. So probably a few weeks later, I was talking to mom again. And she mentioned something. She said, oh, I have a book I want you to read. I found it. And it's a really good book I thought you'd enjoy. And I kind of looked at her and I said, you're an avid reader, aren't you? And she said, I love to read. And she worked during the day. Mm. And I said, when do you read? And she said, oh, after the kids go to bed.
Oh.
I said, do me a favor. I said, and I know maybe not the book that you're reading, but I said, try to do a little bit more of that when you get home, when the kids are still up. I said, I think if your young man sees you, right?
Right.
We might, and I'm not exaggerating, within 2 to 3 weeks, he was pretending to read. He didn't see it, right? He didn't see it in the home. So it didn't hold any importance to him. He didn't have an interest in it.
Right.
So
modeling that we do, and we forget that they're so observant of what we're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, and the research shows us that even as young as 2 and 3 years old, children recognize the difference between print and pictures. Hmm. And I think that's amazing. If you have them, you know, draw me a picture of mommy and daddy, it's going to be this little cohesive little ball. Tell me a story about mommy and daddy, and they're going to have lines and they're going to have little symbols. And they've figured out that writing is linear. They have figured out that there's individual symbols. And so those are all those pre-literacy skills that we want them to have way before they get to kindergarten.
Right, definitely. Because otherwise it's so confusing if they've never seen any of that before, but the groundwork has been built. And also, like you're saying, the importance of it has been
absolutely
established.
Absolutely.
And we do that in our homes. And for homeschoolers, I mean, our kids are with us all day. We have the ability to show that and model that even more. And what a gift that is. Amy had another comment about her 7-year-old wanted a pencil in the shopping list so he could add his own items to it. He understands the power of the shopping list. Yes. And then the 2-year-old picks him up books and reads to her. Yeah, we do. We just... They want to get involved, and the more we allow them that, you know, instead of saying, no, this is just mine, and sharing those things, I think our kids start to realize just how much they can interact with that even.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, so special needs, special, you know, learning difficulties, how do those affect literacy? And do they affect them as much as we believe they do, or are we almost putting the brakes on and limiting our children because we say, because they deal with this, they're going to have an issue with all of the other parts of literacy? You know, I think in terms of how you're explaining literacy, we're looking at it too narrow. And oftentimes my parents come to me and say, well, they've got some reading disability, so we're just going to kind of pull the brakes back and, you know, and stop doing all this stuff until we get this groundwork established. And so they can like read these words. I'm assuming that's not the approach you would take.
Well, you know, and I think it's very complicated. I mean, I think if we're talking about younger children, obviously the birth to three, the preschool kids, that's very different than if we're talking about a child that's in seventh and eighth grade and trying to pull content out of a science book and a math book. You know, no, I'm not going to have you trying to decode and comprehend and read, because exactly. The task is science. The task is social mm-hmm. studies. That's what we're trying to achieve from that.
That's where accommodations would come into
play. Absolutely. Accommodations, some of the wonderful technology that's out there. But when we're talking about younger children, and, you know, we did a little bit of research when I was still back in Indiana, and was able to access many of the parents that their children were receiving the birth to three services, and did a survey with them. And it was very interesting to me. They obviously, some of them had some needs that were much more relevant, prevalent than mm-hmm. than literacy. I mean, we had multiple appointments at doctor's offices. We were, you know, dealing with all kinds of health issues and mm-hmm. feeding issues and just lots of different things, so that literacy kind of came down at the bottom of the list. And I totally understand that. But what I also know is that literacy can easily be incorporated into everyday activities. It doesn't have to be, right, something that's, oh, we have to go do this for a half hour or an hour on top of everything else.
That's great news, because we have so many parents that are running from one therapy absolutely. To the other and doctor's appointments. And I just talked to a parent today, and she's like, we've done therapy all morning. Now we're taking a break for lunch. And so, yeah.
I've been that therapy. I mean, I've been that person that, mm-hmm. that I feel like I'm going in on them, and I'm like, okay, one more thing for you to do. And so that was, you know, another point of doing the book and working with therapies. We can incorporate this and make this very simple to do within, you know, the routine of the day. But again, going back to, yes, I think sometimes we may limit children. I'd like to think it's not as prevalent as it has been in the past. You know, you get that diagnosis, and it just, and I know, I mean, I have a daughter with a learning disability. I have a background in that. I mean, my, you know, speech language pathology, special education, and it, you know, I had the fear. I had the fear of every parent. What's this going to mean? Is she going to go to college? Will she be successful? So I get that diagnosis sometimes stops us. Mm-hmm. But you know, after you get through that and you have to look at your child again. What are your interests? How do you see them? What do they love to do? Mm-hmm. And again, mm-hmm. I think you'd be surprised with incorporating the literacy throughout the day and making it play, making it fun. Our kids will pick that up just like they pick up language. Mm-hmm. Very, very similar fashion. And you know, there are some kids that have very specific disabilities that make reading difficult. But again, there's a lot of research out there, you know, children that are born deaf, we still read to them. We read out loud. We sign. We give them the facial expressions to go with that. The literacy piece still continues.
Right.
Same way with vision impairments. You know, we have to do it differently. We feel facial exaggerations and we do it with them. It's all about the movement. And exactly. and the excitement in what we do and the rhythm that we do and all those things that are literacy. That's
yeah, so true. And it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, and that our personal definition of literacy versus this global idea of what literacy should be for everyone equally.
Absolutely.
And depending on how they can engage with the world and all the messages, I guess, is a broader context of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So as we're talking about techniques and methods, and I guess we'll probably go into that more with examples, but and you've kind of talked a little bit about it too, but are there anything else that as parents we can be thinking of what we're doing to help our children engage with more literary behavior just in everyday context?
Absolutely. You know, the example we had of the shopping list and making a shopping list and crossing it off, you know, as we go through and, you know, we just found this and look, this matches the word on the can. We wanted green beans. Look, it's green beans. Just the simple connection of the symbols and that they go together and they make a word. Really good example. Something as simple as, you know, the letters that we put on the bathtub, you know, during and they stick on the walls and pretending to make words and talking about, oh, look at this letter. This is the same letter that's at the beginning of your name or the same sound. This is a K. Your name starts with K, and trying to make the connections from a sound standpoint. Rhyme is so important. You know, one of the things we do, and again, because I love language, And I teach my students, and they always laugh at me, and I tell them, okay, one of these days you're going to be a parent and you will get this. But the concept of mother ease, of parent-directed speech, of what we do when children are young to engage them, to get them to specifically listen to our speech. They don't come born knowing that speech is important, right? They don't.
Yes.
Right. And so we as caregivers, we do what we call mother ease or parent ease. And it's that slow, excited, short phrases here and now. Good morning. Good morning. How are you? How's my girl this morning? Right. And so that makes the connections. That's the brain getting stimulation and it makes the connections. And the baby goes, oh, wait a minute. That's important. I like that. I'm going to listen to that. Right. And so even the rhyme and the rhythm is the beginning of literacy, because if you think about books and you think about nursery rhymes and all of those, that's all the beginning of literacy. They have to know and pay attention to that. That's how those connections are made. And so those are what we call phonological awareness skills. Just being able to hear sounds, perceive sounds, pull them apart, put them together. And that's all done in that very, very early stages and through books and through all of the rhyming, the games that we do with little ones. And so that really is the beginning of literacy and how we do. And then, you know, they start to play with sounds. You know, they'll start to make up rhymes and they'll be walking around and they'll go, silly, willy, nilly, filly, right? And they don't know. They don't know what those words mean, probably. Right. But they know that they rhyme.
Some of them don't make any sense at all.
Right. But they know that they rhyme and they like the way that that sounds. And so those really are those very beginning skills, listening skills that they need, because then it becomes important for decoding and for spelling, because they have to, right? They have to be able to pull those sounds apart. They have to be able to blend them. And that's
right.
So it's so easy and it's so complicated all at once.
Right. Yeah. I think it's more complicated because we do it without realizing why we do it.
Absolutely.
And then people like you explain it to us and we go, oh, and then that's so, yeah, that's why I need to do it more. And instead of saying that's ridiculous.
Well, and the piece of it is that sometimes when our children don't respond to us in the way that we think they should, right, then we kind of stop. Because we were like, oh, well, they don't want this. Or not. And actually, you probably should be doing it more, right? And you need to continue to do it. Don't stop. Continue to do it and continue to model it. And you know, they most likely kids will pick up on it. They'll enjoy it and they want to be part of that. They want to be able to do it as well.
Yeah, definitely. So. Yeah, because it's again, it's what you're doing in the house, and it's yeah. I remember my mom singing all the time, and it's just that was what home was about. Was everybody sings when you're at home, and just that's the culture that you establish. And I
absolutely
we determine that culture as parents.
Absolutely.
Some comments here, Amy had said, you know, turning the captions on the TV. That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Charity had said, I love that about the grocery checklist. She's going to start doing that this week. She also just said, not sure when questions are asked. We're taking questions at any time. So, but curious if you're going to suggest reading curriculums. We're not going to go into reading curriculums. We're going to go into Karen has a sheet that you can actually establish your own ideas off of that using different types of therapy based on literature, but also she has a book, and we'll put that link up to her book too. And she breaks apart literature and then puts in all the different therapy things and how you can do it hands-on, which is it's great for us that aren't creative and need a little help.
I told you I stole these, you know. I didn't come up with all of them.
You're thinking here. So yep.
You know, another really good example, the shopping list, again, a very easy one, recipes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we use recipes all the time, at least I do. I don't know anything by memory much, but mm-hmm. from a cooking standpoint. But recipes are you know, a wonderful way. You can make them as simple as you want. You can make them with pictures, mm-hmm. right? You could put the label of whatever you need. So a picture of brown sugar, a picture of the butter, and you mm-hmm. could just make your own if they're not reading at this point, if they're using just symbols, and you could use that, have them cross it off, literacy, mm-hmm. right? It really is that mm-hmm. easy. It really is.
That's great. Yeah, it's definitely thinking outside the box, but it's, I guess, approaching reading or understanding of context in a way that the child can understand it. Is mm-hmm. kind of what I'm getting. I'm definitely not an English major. My husband just grieved when I first started blogging because it was bad. I now have an editor.
Those are important.
Yes. Let's dive into, we're about halfway through into your book and some examples, and then we'll go back if we have some time and talk about different types of therapy and just kind of, I know we're going to kind of dive into a little bit of examples anyways mm-hmm. through that. And I don't want to miss out on that as well. So I forgot to pull up your let's see. I have to find my other screen. Anyways, I guess I have to share that as well. No, I can't see anything. There we go. Let's see if I can find where I put your link. So your book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there it is. I can see it on my screen. I just have to find it on the other one. It's Fun with Literacy and hundreds of activities, exercises, and tips for the classroom and therapy. And so you had given me a link here, and I'm going to share that on our broadcast. If I can get back there. And I'll share this link in the feed as well, so you can just click on it and go to that as well after the broadcast. But you have it from the Publishing PSEI store. And so like you were talking about, this is just a compilation of what you got from just going around and speaking and ideas from therapists, which an interdisciplinary type of approach. I am for some reason not getting the right screen. Oh, there it is. Okay.
You're so patient. You're good.
I love technology. Okay. All right. Okay, here we go. Share that to my screen and put it above us, I think. There. So that's what the book looks like. And then you also have a free downloadable that goes with this book. That, if I can figure out which page it's on now. Boy, there we go. That it has the one example that I want to walk through with the Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Sure.
And so if you want to pull this up on your computer at home, you can. Otherwise, we'll just walk through this. And then what it has as well is a blank form that anybody can use to fill in their own, basically, lesson plan.
Absolutely.
On how to do that.
Absolutely. So again, you know, just, and that's one of the things about my book, because not all children, and many of the children that we work with and I've worked with, don't want to sit down and look at a book. Mm-hmm. They're not interested in that. They're not interested in that kind of traditional. And so what I have done is use what I call literacy prompts, nursery rhymes, right? Mm-hmm. And those I can do those in the car as we're waiting in, you know, line for something, or at the bank, or in the grocery store as we're walking through and I'm pushing you in a cart. I can do that. And again, it has that rhythm. It has that rhyme. It has all of the components of literacy. And then using the literacy prompt, I come up with ideas that connect that with other forms of literacy. So, you know, the one that you're saying, the Itsy Bitsy Spider, we're all familiar with that. And so the parent might say, hey, we're going to take a walk today. We're going to look for spiders.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's helping with content. That's helping with meaning, right? We now know that we like spiders to stay outside. We might see them inside. We'd rather not. But, you know, we're going to go look for them outside. Maybe you get those little plastic bugs from the dollar store, and you put them outside in places and go to find them. Mm-hmm. See, there are 5 spiders out on the back porch. Can you find them? And so, again, helping with content and just making that connection for them, right, and making it fun. Yeah. If you think about that, even just in that activity, we've done language, oral language. Mm-hmm. We've done gross motor. We've done fine motor, because we've got to pick them up. We can do some social and emotional. We can talk talk about numbers. You could talk about concepts. You could talk about one's up high, one's low, one's on the rock, one's under the rock. All of that is just complete and total language and all of the other skills that we know that children learn best with. We all learn best when it's multisensory. When we're engaged, we have our hands on it, when we can move, when we can touch. And so children are, that's the way they learn, is through play. Mm-hmm. That's the way they learn. And so they have to be moving. They have to be engaged. Yeah. And this is the exact.
With what they already know, and it allows that new information to be embedded much easier.
Absolutely. 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 So from a physical therapy standpoint, you know, if you're having physical therapy, the PT might say, you know, after we sang Itsy Bitsy Spider, we crawled on the floor like a spider. So maybe, again, working on those gross motor skills and talking about how a spider moves. And again, talk about, you know, a spider has 8 legs. A spider is black. A spider, still very language based. But you have that gross motor piece of it. Again, those plastic bugs, maybe we went and hunted them. Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe we went on a bug hunt. So very have a lot of gross motor opportunity with that. Occupational therapy, maybe a connect the dot. If they're doing some writing, maybe some, you know, work with crayons or grass, making glitter, sprinkling glitter, maybe putting your hands all over it and spreading it, maybe doing some sensory sorts of things with that. Of course, speech therapy, we can just like, it's all language. So, you know, we just do whatever. We could talk about the book. We can make a book. There's a lot of, and I should have given you these links. I didn't even think about it. And I will send them to you later. Okay. There are several links online where you can make your own books. Like some of them are just picture books.
Yeah.
Some of them have words. And so a lot of times, you know, maybe I can't leave the book I have with all the kids or they can't take it with me, but we can make their own and then they have it and they can keep it. And I'll be sure to send you those links.
Definitely.
So, but something along those lines. And so there's just lots of ways to use that one literacy prompt, right? Mm-hmm. And do all sorts of just different fun things that, again, like you said, take concepts they know and build on it. Because when children do get older and they have a difficult time with comprehension of text, many times it's because they've not had that experience. They don't have the background to understand what, you know, it's hard enough to decode or it's hard enough to make sense of the language piece of it. And if I don't have a background, if I don't know anything about the topic, then I'm really at a disadvantage.
Right. Yeah. So. It's you're trying to connect too many dots and you just can't juggle it all, especially if you're trying to just decode at the same time. And, you know, and if you have dyslexia and you're getting, you know, thrown off with all the words you can't picture. And there's so many things going on in their brains.
Oh, absolutely. And the frustration and just the frustration and the fatigue. Of trying to read is
exactly. Yes. My middle one is that way. And I know that you could just watch them go. It was like, okay, we're done.
We're finished. We're done with this. Yeah.
This is not effective anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So really parents can take any bit of literature and go through these empty boxes you have on your blank sheet on this downloadable and say, okay, what, Physical therapy is more gross motor. So how can I approach this text or what this text is trying to teach from all these different perspectives is kind of what your brainstorming was about, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would think that any therapist, if, you know, a parent comes to them and says, you know, I really want to try and incorporate some literacy experiences in what we're doing. Can we brainstorm some ways that, you know, you could take what we're working on this week and do it in physical therapy? You know, if there's any physical therapists out there, I don't want to offend anybody, but you know, a lot of times when I would go to these houses and I'd work with families and they go, it's so funny because when you come to the door, they're just like running to see you. And the physical therapist comes, you know, they're running away because unfortunately, a lot of times what they're doing, you know, they're stretching muscles, they're making them move and it's not comfortable. It's not, it hurts. Right. And so if you can incorporate this literacy piece, if you can make it fun, sometimes you can kind of distract them from the fact that.
I was just going to say distracting is a good word for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, if it's something that they're familiar with, right, we've already done it. We've been talking about bugs and they love bugs and they're really into bugs. I bet they crawl all over the floor to find bugs. But if you just tried to get them to crawl.
It
does come in very, very helpful sometimes, I think, as a distraction. Again, you know, just like as a speech pathologist, if, you know, I'm working with a child and I see them doing something, if I see them sitting in a position that isn't correct, I'm going to correct it, right? I know that the physical therapist doesn't want them sitting that way, or I know, you know, we need to work on this trunk stability, right? You want the physical therapist, the occupational therapist, to do the language piece of it as well as they're doing their therapy. That's the only way that this works, right? Children learn best with it being multisensory.
And we do recommend to parents, you know, if you have a therapist you work with, definitely be trying to work out a plan with them because they have experience that you can pull into your homeschool
absolutely.
And will benefit your child if you're you're sharing back and forth and doing things, you know, the same thing from a different perspective. And like you're saying, approaching it from all those different angles really does ground it more, gives it meaning, and it helps the child to develop that stronger base for what they're building on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. So I just had a question and then it went out of my brain. I'll think of it eventually. I should have written it down.
It happens to me all the time.
In working with therapists, I know that was my one question. We were going to talk a little bit about the 21-day March challenge that is going on.
Absolutely.
What is that about? I've just pulled their website up. And
so this is really exciting. I was thrilled to see this pop up on my Facebook last week. And this is put out by the American Speech Language Hearing Association, ASHA, which is the governing body for speech language pathologists and audiologists. And of course, we have a passion for literacy. And so they have come out with what they've called the 21-day challenge. 21 days of reading with your child. And they have a lot of resources. I've popped that up there. They have a calendar where you can do different things and you can talk about different activities. So it's something that ASHA has put out. And I know a lot of speech language pathologists are giving it out to their families at the schools. They've done Facebook pages with it. And I'm, you know, pop on it, take a look at it. You should be able to access some of the resources that they have there. And it's nice. It's got some good suggestions
for
incorporating literacy.
And there's maybe not 21 days left in March, but maybe there is. I can't.
Well, and the nice thing about it is 21 days of any month.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Yeah. So. And there is some good suggestions for each day. And That's great. That's a good resource. And again, I'll share that link in the feed when we're done. So I did think of my question.
Oh, okay.
So if a parent is looking at, I want to do this, where can I get some ideas for literature to use for this type of thing? I mean, the Itsy Bitsy Spider is definitely one that is simple, but just to generate, you know, snippets of literature that we can start with. And I'm assuming as a child gets older, it's easier to build in larger blocks of literature, but you do definitely when they're younger want to start small. Where could they go to find things like that?
Well, and I mean, like I said, always some of those the rhymes and the songs that you grew up with. I mean, we all remember our parents having, you know, certain songs that they sang to us, even if it's, you know, You Are My Sunshine. That was, you know, the one that I sang to my daughters. I mean, you could take that and what could you do with that? You could take a walk and go see the sunshine and you could talk about the color of the sun and you could, I mean, all of that, and even have it written out. You could have all of the pictures someplace where you could see them, find them. So starting with just some of those very basics that you do every day. I'm a huge fan of the dollar store. I love a dollar store. Those dollar books, you know, one of the things I hear a lot of parents will say, I don't want to give them that book. You know, they might chew on it. They might tear it up. Dollar store. It's a buck.
Yeah.
How else do they learn how to handle a book than to have it in their hands? Right.
Right. And so that's why a lot of parents avoid the library because, oh no, I'm going to have this huge fee if my child ruins that book and protect it. When really we want them to engage with the piece of literature as well and become comfortable with that.
One of the kiddos, I've had several kids that I've worked with that have had issues with excessive drooling because of, oral motor weakness. Right. And, you know, you hate to not let them have a book, but obviously, you know, it does a lot to the pages and it's just not sanitary. And so, you know, I've made copies of books. I've went to Goodwill to, you know, the dollar store, or like good, especially Goodwill, ripped out the pages, and I'll put them in binder sheets, the clear binder sheets.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. And yeah. then put them in a regular binder. You just wipe them off. I just wipe it off when they're done. Right? Mm-hmm. So any of those things to just make it accessible. The mm-hmm. other thing is making sure that if you have those books that they can get to them, you know, yes. right? That they can mm-hmm. reach them, that they can have them physically in their hands. But the dollar store, like I said, they have the good plastic books, they have the cloth books. And mm-hmm. and for a little one, for a child that's you know, a year, 18 months, even two, chewing is how they find out about it, right? That's yes, that's how they learn. Mm-hmm. And so chewing's okay. And then, you know, as you read to them and you show them how, you know, we handle the pages and that we turn the pages, then they learn how to, you know, interact with books and treat them the way that we expect them to be treated. Secondhand bookstores. I love secondhand bookstores. Mm-hmm. You know, go and get some that, you know, if they're tattered, they're torn, who cares? You know, you're going through, you're looking at the pictures. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, anything that you guys engage in as a family, you know, if dad likes to build things, you know, what about the instructions that come with, you know, the new TV stand that we're going to make? Right. That's literacy. So let's see if we can't somehow, you know, if you want to be like dad and you want to help dad, here are the two tools. This is the one that I need. Can you go get that for me? Right. So learning how to just use instructions. You know, again, like I said, the recipes are big, cereal boxes, you know, letting them try to pick out when you go to the grocery store, which one do you think says, you know, Cheerios. Which one do you think says Cheerios? You know, it's a yellow box. It has a picture of Cheerios on the front, you know, just giving them some ideas of what to look for from a literacy standpoint to help, again, with that personal sense of literacy.
And that's so funny because we look for the color, not the name, you know, and we right. don't think of that being literacy, but really that is because we've learned to associate a certain type of something with a name.
Right.
And so the broader scope of literacy is being able to navigate through those things.
Absolutely. Well, and that, you know, that's what language and literacy are about. It's representation, right? Mm-hmm. Words and pictures yeah. represent something. And that's what it is. Just with, even with colors, if you think about, what does red mean? Well, it means hazard. It means stop. What does yellow mean? It means caution. What does orange mean? You can, you know, the meaning of those, and we use those, right, to be able to function and to, you know, be able to drive down the highway and to know, you know, when to touch something, when not to touch something. That's literacy, right? Because you're interacting with the symbols in your environment.
Yeah. So oftentimes we'll get a question from a parent saying, okay, I have a child who is severely disabled, and yet I'm required to teach them reading. So as you're speaking about this, my thought is there are some very, if we're thinking of literacy in the bigger picture, teaching our child to read and understand symbols and things within those contexts, is teaching reading.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like I said, you know, and again, this is kind of my personal and maybe a little bit professional. Mm-hmm. I don't know that all children are going to learn to read. It's a struggle. Yeah. It's not easy for some children. And again, I get to the point where I want to say, okay, is it about the decoding or is it about the content?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, again, from an academic standpoint, if what you want this child to be able to do is to go to a restaurant and order, that's his level of literacy. That's what we need to work towards.
Because you get to a certain point and, you know, when we get to the high school level, parents are often coming and we need a transition plan. So how much longer do we teach decoding when we want our child to be functional?
Absolutely.
And so there, you have to draw a line at some point and say, yes, maybe they still have not plateaued with their ability to read, but where we're headed, what's most important to focus on right now?
And there's no reason not to continue. If we're still making gains, absolutely.
Yes.
Do it. Keep working on it. Mm-hmm. But don't again make that the whole focus and forget the other piece, the functional piece, as you call it.
Yeah.
Because that's what they need. Those are the skills that they need.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately.
Yeah.
So.
But I think if a child, you know, your student or has that desire.
Mm-hmm.
Which you were talking about at the very beginning when we were talking about building that desire within our family and just how we interact with literature and
right.
and reading, then you're not going to have, they're going to have that built in them as they continue as an adult anyways, because
Absolutely.
They see its importance.
Absolutely. Well, and they understand the importance. They understand what you can gain from it,
mm-hmm.
and so it becomes something they want to achieve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so instead of us trying to motivate and push and teach,
exactly,
they're trying to to gain it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know my own personal experience. You know, with my youngest daughter having a learning disability. My oldest one was an avid reader. I mean, she read and reread and, I mean, just books all over the place.
Right.
And my poor youngest daughter, you know, she'd go to those Scholastic things and she'd take money and she'd come back and she'd have books and they just sat there because it was such a struggle for her.
Right.
And she wanted to do it. She wanted to read. She wanted to, but when she sat down, it just wasn't fun. There was too much. It was too much work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she loved if I'd sit there and read it to her, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's literacy as well. I'd much rather sit and read to her and with her
mm-hmm.
than have her try to struggle through it and give up.
That's, I think that's an incredible perspective is, you know, literature reading doesn't have to be a solitary thing.
Absolutely.
My husband loves it. When we used to travel, I would read books out loud to him. He doesn't like to read. He's a very slow reader, but he's like, you can read fast. And so you just read while we're traveling. And I didn't mind it because I do love to read. And so, you know, finding that balance and having your child be okay with this is how I engage.
Absolutely. If you do that with them, if you read with them and you can help make those connections,
mm-hmm.
you can help connect that. Do you remember when we took that trip and we went down to see grandma and we had that flat tire? This is a lot like that. I mean, I don't know what I'm saying, but you can make those connections because then again, it goes back to, I have something to connect it to. I can comprehend now because I can make a connection to my own life experiences. A lot of these kids can't do that on their own.
Right. With older kids and you get into this more complex literature. And I know I did a lot of read out louds with my kids.
Absolutely.
And I would stop if I saw those quizzical looks on their faces and say, so you remember when? And
absolutely.
This is what they're trying to say. And then, you know, but still read the context that it was written in because they gain the grammar and the sentence structure and how the author is writing. But yet you are kind of like that intermediary person who's the interpreter.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's important too.
Mm-hmm. I know even and sometimes when my, trying to remember which one of my girls it was, but they were in middle school and the middle school teachers were reading in class, like once a week they would read. And it was real interesting to talk with the teachers because they're like, the kids love it. They love when I read. Mm-hmm. And I can remember him saying, part of it is I think they just like not having to do it on their own. But I think they enjoy my enthusiasm. They enjoy my, making connections for them. And even as middle schoolers, I think kids enjoy being read to.
Yeah. Well, the popularity of audiobooks now is amazing. And I love being read to, you know, it's kind of nice to not have my eyes always focus. I can be doing something else that's menial and just be listening to a story. And
absolutely.
And traveling is always a wonderful thing too. Actually, next month I'm interviewing an audiobook voice.
Oh, how neat.
he's gonna be talking about how to use audiobooks in your homeschool. So
that's neat. That's, yeah.
That'll be a broadcast to look into if you're interested more in audiobooks. But Marie Prince had a comment for us. Making a personal connection with the storybook makes a world of difference for children. And, you know, that's just what you were saying.
It's, absolutely.
It is so important because otherwise they're just left with questions. And then literature itself becomes almost this, there's a chasm that they can't cross.
Yes.
And I think a lot of what we've been talking tonight is building those bridges with that literature, with things that our kids already can associate with, and being that person to help them cross that.
Right. Well, and what we know about what good readers do, and if you are a reader, you'll go, oh yeah, I do that. I didn't know that was a strategy. But you pick up content by looking at the words around it, and you pick up meaning by looking at the pictures, and you reread when you don't understand. And these are skills that many times our kids don't have. And so we might even have to teach them. And that's why starting with books with children when they're little is so important, right? Because you're picking out and you're going, oh, look at this duck. Look at this duck. What do you think's going to happen? He's right by the water. Oh, I bet he might fall in, right? You're teaching them how to look at pictures, make connection with the print. Mm-hmm. What are they going to do when they get in geography and they're trying to decide where this is? Well, they're going to look over at the map and go, oh, see, that's where that is. Mm-hmm. And so those skills, like I said, don't start when you get into kindergarten or first grade. Right. Those are the skills that they're learning when we sit down and we share those pictures and the literacy experiences that we do with them.
Yeah.
So very early.
So we're wrapping up our time, but I definitely want to just let everybody know about your book again. And it's called Fun with Literacy, and I will put the picture up, or not the picture, but the link up in the feed when we're done.
Thank you.
And it's like Karen was talking about, it was a compilation of a bunch of ideas on just how to engage with literature. And so it's a good place to start. And then she has a downloadable too that I'll put a link up for that has a blank sheet to just kind of walk you through as if you write lesson plans. Maybe take whatever you're doing for history or that and just fill in the rest of those squares to say, how can we interact with this as an occupational therapist would, as a physical therapist would. It helps us to think outside the box on how to do these things instead of just let's follow this plan that has our child sitting all the time. And sitting is not how we engage.
No, absolutely not. No, none of us just like to sit and listen for extended periods of time.
Mm-hmm. So I don't even. I get up and exercise in the middle of the afternoon. My brain is going, I am fried. Let me out. Well, thank you so much, Karen. This has
been so welcome. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. I always love to talk about literacy. It's,
mm-hmm. And we can tell it's a passion of yours because this hour went by fast, as I told you it would.
It does. Wow.
So I just want to thank all of you for joining us in this broadcast, your comments. I didn't get to all of them, but definitely thank you for joining us and for just the questions you had. And so this whole month, we're focusing on movement and education, which is so important. And that's our guest last week. And next week, we're going to talk about yoga and just, let me see where it is, yoga to foster social, emotional, and intellectual growth. And especially for children who have a lack of body awareness, how that can be so key to help them with learning. So that's our focus next week on Sped Homeschool Conversations. And we thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding this broadcast and for viewers like you who donate on our website. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we rely on your giving to keep going. So thank you so much, everybody. Let's keep the conversation going in the support group on Facebook. We have one, and it has, I think, we're over 1,600 members already. So pop in there with your questions, lots of experienced parents to share what they're doing. And then I'll see you again next week. Bye, everybody. Thanks again, Karen.